So, if Bruce Boudreau wasn't lying, and someone in the Canucks organization wanted Quinn Hughes to be a center last year, does he automatically become the best center on that team?
Well, I mean, you've got two pretty good centers. I mean, probably a third, right? Technically, if Bo Horvat was there, like, why would you convert Quinn Hughes to a center?
Okay, well, you would have had, I'm assuming this would be, like, after Bo Horvat gets traded, because then you'd have Patterson, Hughes, and JT Miller.
Yeah, I feel like that's, I think the Canucks last year maybe needed a winger. I don't think they actually needed more centers, right? Like, I mean, JT Miller can play, you know, left center, like left wing center, right wing, so he'd be fine. But, like, I don't think the need was another center.
But does he become more valuable to the organization than Elias Pettersson? Does he become the number one center on that team?
Well, I think you have to take a look at where Quinn Hughes is at, right? Like, if we're talking about, like, after the trade deadline, right? This is would be when Hronek was brought in. Like, are you willing to give up someone, your number one D, to be another guy to maybe become a 1B center?
It just dawned upon me, though. Didn't Bruce get fired in, like, early January last year? That replaced Rick Tocchet.
Wait, so I'm confused with this train of thought. So is Bruce Boudreau saying that someone told him to make Quinn Hughes a center, or was that Bruce's idea to make Quinn Hughes a center?
Bruce Boudreau revealed someone in the Canucks organization tried to get him to make Quinn Hughes a center last year.
And is Boudreau saying that because he said no, that's why he got fired? Or is it just,
comment? I'm just saying it couldn't be after the trade deadline because he was fired before the trade deadline.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, maybe this was like after trade deadline. No, it was impossible because he wasn't in the organization by then. He was already fired. While they had Patterson, Miller, and Horvat.
Yeah, so that sounds even more stupid. But then at the same time, someone in the organization could be anyone from the equipment manager all the way up to the CEO, right? So, like, I think you take this as a grain of salt. Like, I think it's a soundbite, but I don't think that it was really realistic. Like, if you said they're considering putting Quinn Hughes as, like, a winger for last year, I could see that being a bit more realistic, but a center on that team that still had Horvat playing up the middle, I think that that doesn't seem reasonable.
Do you think putting him in as a winger is reasonable as well?
Well, I think teaching a defenseman to play wing is probably easier than trying to put a defenseman to play center, right? Like, how many – well, I was going to say, like, I mean, like, in mind, like, in, like, when you're in junior, right? Or, like, even before that, like, Pee Wee and Bantam, like, you'll play, like – it's not as difficult to go between positions because, you know, normally your best player can pretty much play every position. But, like, you don't see many, like, defensemen who will play, you know, center, right? Like, they'll play up on the wing. Especially, like, if you see sometimes teams that have an extra defenseman and don't have enough forward depth, they'll put up their defenseman to play fourth line wing, not fourth line center.
But you don't put your first pairing defenseman, your superstar defenseman, making a boatload of money there, right?
You don't, but when you think about the Canucks last year, right? Like, they weren't a really good team, right? So what ended up, they needed, like, ideas to improve, and maybe one outside the box idea was maybe putting Hughes up in the forward position, because, like, I think they had quite a few injuries with the forward groups. They just couldn't find the right mix. And I mean, Quinn Hughes is an offensive leaning player, so it would make sense to maybe put him at a forward position, but center seems a little bit, well, maybe the thought could have still been like they're planning to trade Horvat, so that's why they thought they should move Hughes to center. So, I mean, even if this is before like trade deadline, like before Bruce Boudreau was fired, I mean, it still keeps the same train of thought that you know, maybe he uses the center to replace Horvat.
Man, I don't know, man. That's a... I feel like if you're going to ask any of those defensemen to do that, it would be someone you're not paying like $8 million for and that's like performing very well. You know what I mean? It'd be like someone who skates well, doesn't really play defense anyways. Like an Ethan Bear or something, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I mean, if you think about all the defensemen... Oh, sorry. Think about all the players that play both forward and defensemen, right? Like, I mean, I think the obvious name is Brent Burns, who kind of, you know, came into the league as a forward, then went to D, then kind of played a little bit forward and now back to D. Like, but that's like a case where, like, again, like Brent Burns wasn't playing center; he was going back up the right wing. But for the depth role guys, like Brendan Smith was a guy who has like lefty left wing eligibility, I think. I want to say Luke Wachowski was also like a right wing, right D. And like a blossom pass would be, I don't even remember, Ian White for the Leafs played both D and forward at one point, right? So like, there are players that can play it, but like, again, these guys are third pairing guys. These guys are depth guys. It's more of just like, you want to play four lines of forwards and three defensive pairings. So that's why you move a defenseman up. Not, oh, I want, you know, my star defenseman to play center.
Yeah, again, you don't want your star defenseman doing that because your star defenseman is a really good defenseman. So if they're already playing at their strengths, why do you want them to learn a new position, especially one that makes so much money that will have so many eyes on him? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. I just, you know, if you look at Quinn Hughes' numbers last year, I mean, he was good, but I don't know. I think just because Vancouver was in such turmoil last year that, you know, not making the playoffs, for a team that everyone thought was going to make the playoffs, they just needed some change. And, you know, an idea is an idea, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good idea. So,
but I mean, since then, they've been pretty good. They're leading the Pacific, aren't they?
Well, I mean, that's this year. That our comment was last year. Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few streaky teams that we can talk about. Maybe we'll talk about that after the intro.
You're listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network.
All right, and we are back. So, I know I also wanted to kind of mentioned they're talking about kind of some streaky teams. I mean, the Canucks, they're kind of streaky right now. They've won four in a row, but they don't have the longest winning streak. Also, which team has the longest winning streak right now?
The Winnipeg Jets.
And at the time of our recording here, Olsen is wrong because the Jets have won 8 in a row, which is tied with the same winning streak as the Kraken, who have 8 wins in a row. But there's two teams with winning streaks of 9 in a row. And that's the
Oilers. Right now?
Yeah, the Oilers and the Panthers are both riding 9-game winning streaks.
I refuse to acknowledge the Oilers because then I'll get sad.
Well, I mean, like, okay, which team do you want us to talk about? Between those four teams with, I mean, like, winning even 5 in a row is quite hard, I would say, like, given how much parity is in the NHL, but the fact that we have four teams with, like, winning streaks longer than 5 games right now is kind of crazy. Like, which team do you want to talk about first?
Your choice.
I mean, you mentioned the Jets. Let's talk the Jets. I mean, they're quietly, currently, as of January 13th, before the January 13th games, of course, they are currently tops in the league with 60 points in 41 games. I know as someone that lived in Winnipeg, they don't get a lot of media attention. So it's kind of surprising, like, you know, the Jets are pretty much number one in the NHL, but no one's kind of recognized that. Everyone's talking about everyone else right now.
How much of it is because they're a small market? Like, if the, I want to say a team that doesn't have any storylines to start with, right? If I start with a team like, I don't know, the St. Louis Blues, smaller market, kind of it's a bit more of the forgotten ones. No real storylines coming into the season. We're not first in the league. Do you think people really care as much as, let's say, a Toronto Maple Leafs being number one in the league?
I think it 100% is due to the fact that they're a small market team. I mean, the media coverage, even in Canada for the Jets, I think it's slowly picking up, but still, it's focused on Toronto and Edmonton and maybe even a little bit Vancouver. But, like, if you look at the U.S., I mean, I dare find an American on the street and ask them where Winnipeg is, and they probably couldn't find it, right? Like, I think the media coverage for the Jets is just so low, and they've got a good team. I think it's a bit surprising given the fact the moves that they made. I mean, we all thought they were going to trade away all their core players and start again, and then they kind of did a halvesies, and everyone was like, okay, like, you haven't really chosen the direction, but this team's just somehow has clicked.
Have they clicked, or have Connor Hellebuck just carried them harder than usual?
I mean, I think if you look at this team, I think maybe they got some of the headaches or some of the troublemakers out of their locker room. I think that they've been resilient, I would say. Like, I don't know if Hellebuck's been the only reason why they're winning. Like, it's just the fact that I think everyone's contributing right now. Like, if you look at their top three lines, like, everyone's, like, consistently, like, performing. And, like, keep in mind, they're doing this without Kyle Connor in the lineup. Like, Kyle Connor's been injured during this entire eight-game winning streak. Like, it's kind of crazy that, you know, your number one pure goal scorer isn't there yet. Everyone's just contributing right now. And, I mean, granted, I do agree. Like, if your goalie is not allowing more than three goals a game, and all you need to do is, you know, if you score three, you're automatically going to win. Like, that's a pretty easy way to get some points in the standings there. So, I don't know.
Hold up, though. Do you know what their team save percentage is?
I assume it's around a 920. I just looked at Hellebuck's
923. Numbers. And then, okay, so you look at Hellebuck's numbers and you see that he's got a 220 GAA, right? Do you know what the backup Laurent Brossoit's GAA is?
270?
218.
I mean, like, Laurent Brossoit, I would probably say, is one of the very good backups in the NHL. But, like, I think it shows that it's not Hellebuck that's carrying. It's the system that they have, right? It comes from the entire team, their defensive structure. It's Rick Bowness, right? It's not just their goalies.
Is Connor Hellebuck a system goalie?
No, I think he's a good goalie in his own right, but I think when you combine his great, like, his attributes and his being a good goalie with a system like Rick Bowness is, it works hand in hand and makes the Jets currently the number one team in the NHL.
So are all goalies system goalies?
No, I mean, if we want to talk about the most controversial one, would Martin Brodeur be considered a system goalie, given the fact that he played in Jersey?
No, I don't believe that he's a system. I didn't believe that Connor Hellebuck's a system goalie, but I see you have suggested that.
I did not suggest that. I just said that they work together well. You know, like, the team in front of him and him combined make them the top defensive team. They've allowed the least amount of goals per game right now. They're getting timely scoring from everyone. Like, it's a solid team, and I think it's, like, agreeable that, like, they have the top third line in the NHL, which, I mean, isn't always a big selling point, but the fact that you have a line that can shut down other teams yet can contribute still, like, I think that's key. And I don't know, it just seems to me that, like, this Jets team, they're solid, solid team, and everything's clicked, and it's just been next man up mentality. I think it's going to be interesting to see, now that Mark Scheifele's out, how they're going to, you know, play. It's kind of forced Cole Perfetti into that number one center position, but it'll be interesting to see. I think they've got a solid team. Again, I realize that us talking about all these streaky teams today means all these streaks are probably going to be broken by the time we upload this episode.
All right, whose streak are we jinxing next?
Well, let's help your team out, and well, let's jinx the Edmonton Oilers next. I mean, I think we talked about them either last episode or episode before when, you know, they're starting to look like a playoff team again, right? Like, this isn't the same team that we're laughing about back in the beginning of the season, like facing San Jose in what we called like the tank game. Like, this is now a team that's climbed the standings. Technically, they're not, they're in a wild card position, but I think at this point you can kind of guarantee that they're going to be in the playoffs now. Like, they've won 9 in a row. I'm trying to guess how many games has, was it Chris Knoll? I don't know. What's the coach?
Chris Knobloch?
Yeah. How many games has he lost? Like, maybe like 5? Like, you probably count them all in one hand, I'm guessing. Like, he's brought, you know, just a different voice into that team. And, you know, McDavid's look good. Dreisaitl looks good. Everything just seems to be clicking. And, like, I know we talk about Campbell and the fact that, you know, you got a lot of money just stuck there in the minors right now that's buried. But the team right now at the NHL level is doing great. And, you know, like, they're probably going to keep catching up that Pacific division right now. So they look good. I don't know what to say. Like, they've, that early season was just kind of like false pretense. And I think the team that we see now is pretty much the team that we were all expecting.
Chris Knobloch is 19-6-0 as part of the Oilers head coach. I mean, do you expect them to have a, what is that, like a 25 games? He's won 19 of them. So what, 685 around there? My math all right? 685 winning percentage? Is this a 685 win percentage team?
I'm going to say
76%.
Yeah, I was going to say your math is a little bit off. I mean, yeah. I think there's going to be some regression at some point, but like, I'm not going to say they're going to regress all the way back down or even regress to the means of the season, right? Like, I think this is a team that could probably play, I mean, it's hard to, it doesn't really work in hockey days, but I think they could play 600 hockey the rest of the way and they'll be fine. Like, this is at minimum a 600 team, right? Like, and by 600, I mean like, their points percentage is probably going to be like a 0.6 the rest of the way.
But how much of this comes down to Chris Knobloch playing, being a good coach? How much of it comes down to Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl regressing back to the mean? No, sorry, progressing back to the mean.
I want to say it's probably 25% Chris Knobloch and 75%, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl being like, hey, for McDavid and Draisaitl, let's just like tear up this NHL, right? Like, I don't think, like, when you look at Oilers games, I don't see much of a difference in how they've played per se, but I, like, there's no difference in deployment. It's just, you know, they're just play up to their skill level, their talent level, right? I don't think anything's truly changed. Like, it's not a perfect team, I would say, right? But when you have like generational talents like Draisaitl and McDavid, I think when they play up to their talent, like, you're fine. So I don't know if it's truly the new coach has done much. I mean, I'm not an expert hockey analyst, but like, I would say like a lot of this probably has been just, you know, McDavid, Draisaitl and the rest of the team. I think like you've got like, you know, Hyman, you've got Nugent Hopkins, you've got like Evander Kane, like they've got good players, and I think they just kind of stumbled out of the blocks and it cost Jay Woodcroft his job.
Can I point out you're missing what I think is the X factor on this team?
Would it be Stuart Skinner?
No. Okay, that is a pleasant surprise, but Evan Bouchard. He is on pace for more than a point a game this season.
I think he, I don't want to say he's playing in a good system, but how many of his points has he generated without McDavid or Draisaitl? Like, that would be my like question, right? Like how many of his points are at even strength without, like, you know, those guys on the ice? I think he's a good defenseman, don't get me wrong, but I just wonder, you know, he is playing on such a high, strong offensive team. I do agree he's playing with like an ideal partner at home right now, right? But like, to me, I just kind of, I don't know. Bouchard to me sounds like I need to see more. I need to see one more season of him playing at this high level in terms of generating offensive like production, and then kind of go from there.
Okay, whether or not it's he's a part of the system, like numbers don't lie in this sense. Like, yeah, he is getting the majority of his starts, you know, in the offensive zone, and that helps with point production. But that then does come back to he has to produce in that scenario, right? Like, he's always been a very heavy, like, offensive zone start type of player, but he has to prove himself in that sense to be able to provide results in that case to be able to do that, right?
Yes, but, I mean, like, if you're putting a good situation, like, he's a good player, don't get me wrong. Is he, like, a Norris candidate type of, like, defenseman? No, like... He's generating points because he gets offensive zone pushes, and the fact that he plays with McDavid a lot, right? Like, if you look at, like, his zone starts, he's in line with guys like McDavid, Hyman, Nugent, Hopkins, which is their top line, right? Like, I think he's probably got the highest offensive zone start push out of all the defensemen on the Oilers. Like, until he plays number one, like, defenseman minutes, I would say, like, hold up on Bouchard just for a sec. I think he's not just a power play quarterback, but I think we need to see a bit more before we say he's, like, a true number one.
I don't think he's a true number one. I think he's a number two right now. But, hey, man, his career has 40 points. He's got 39 in 38 games. I think that speaks volumes as well. You can say it's because of who he plays with. I think it's more than that.
Fair enough. All right, let's talk about another Pacific team to kind of jinx them too. The Kraken. I think I've reeled off 8 in a row. Like, and this is surprising because the Kraken aren't that high in the standings. So, like, for a team that's currently ranked, I want to say they're 20th in the league right now. 20th in the league. They've won 8 in a row. They're actually on a 10-game point streak. Their 2 losses before that were both overtime shootout losses. So are the Seattle Kraken finally finding something? Like, has that Winter Classic helped them a little bit? Like, what, you know, why are the Kraken suddenly so good?
Is it a cop-out to say Joey Decord?
I mean, when you talk about X factors on a team doing well, I think the goalie is number one, right? If your goalie is playing well, a winning streak is very, very easy, right? A goalie has one bad game, that's your streak gone.
He's a 948 since December 1st. Like, that's not sustainable, right? Like, when you go back to what you were saying about the Oilers, oh, they're like a 600 team. Kraken or not. They just happened to have a really hot goalie, and that's carried them. Am I kind of reading the Kraken correctly, or am I just a hater?
No, I think you're right. Like, Joey Decord, I would argue, was their number 3 goalie this season. Probably last year, I think he was like a number 4 for them, right? Like, I don't think anyone saw this out of him. I'm trying to think, like, I'm pretty sure he played in the Sens organization a while back, but like, I would agree. I think Joey Decord's carried this team, but again, the sustainability, like you said, this is probably not a 600 team. Joey Decord's going to regress back to his mean, and then maybe the Kraken might taper off, but it's been helpful. I mean, the Kraken have kind of climbed back up kind of into more playoff contention than previous, and, you know, like, this team isn't bad. Like, it was maybe another team that was kind of low-key bad at the beginning that we really didn't talk about, and now they're just kind of back to the team that, like, the level that we thought they would be.
So what is that level?
I think that they're a very, very, they're a solid team with no superstars, and, you know, over a long stretch of time, they will be, like, a playoff wildcard team, but when you need them to win a game, like best of 7, they don't have the star power to compete. So I'd say, like, if we're calling the Oilers at like at minimum a 600 team, I'd probably say the Kraken are like a 550, maybe a little bit lower than that.
Does this team not scream like 500 to you?
No, I think they're slightly better. I mean, like, for a team that can roll up four lines like they can, like, I think you're a little bit better than 500.
Let me read out the names of the top scorers, okay? Vince Dunn, Oliver Bjorkstrand, and Ely Tolden. Well, one more on there. Jared McCann. Those are the only players that are averaging more than 0.5 points a game. Like, that I've played consistently. Like, Jaden Schwartz is 18, but only 25 games.
Well, I think maybe the Jaden Schwartz injury probably played a lot into it, too. But, like, I think if you're looking at this team, I think maybe this is a team that's has too much depth. Or, like, every line's basically the same, but, like, they don't have, like, a number one line, realistically. They kind of just spread out everything. I think that's why, like, yes, there's a lot of guys that are, you know, under 0.5 points a game. But then you also look at the fact how many of their players have 0.4, right? Like, they've got a lot more players like that, right? So, I don't know. I think this is just a team that once, now that they kind of got everyone healthy, they should be fine. It's just maybe in the beginning they weren't as healthy.
Is this team the anti-Oilers?
Like, not top-heavy at all?
Yes.
I think so. Like, I mean, when we think of, like, expansion teams, right, you're not going to have a lot of star talent. This is the definition of a team that does not have a star player. Like, Kraken fans are going to hate us, but I do agree, like, Beniers and Dunn, they're going to be, they're better than, you know, above average, I would say. Beniers, maybe not this season. He's kind of in a sophomore slump. But, like, Dunn, I would say, would probably be, like, a top defenseman on most teams. But everyone else is kind of just, like, you know, they're probably all middle six guys. And if you look at the Oilers, there you have a top six and they have a bottom six. And that's about it.
So when does the streak end?
My guess is that it's going to be probably tonight. Because we're jinxing everyone. We've got one more team to jinx, and that's the Panthers, who have won 9 games. Again, quietly climbing the standings, right? Like, a lot of these teams, I think maybe it's us, but I feel like we haven't talked about the Panthers at all this season. I don't know if that's because, you know, it's probably the furthest away from us. But, like, they've got a good team. Like, this was also a team that made the Stanley Cup Finals, but for some reason, we don't talk about them enough as a good team. Like, they've returned most of the same players. I know we all said, like, with Ekblad and Montour being injured in the beginning of the season, like, they weren't going to do well. But, you know, everything's, now that they're back, like, this is basically the same team that went to the Finals, so this should be a good team. I think it's just surprising that we haven't noticed that they've won 9 in a row.
So what I appreciate from this Panthers streak is that they're, like, winning by a lot in a lot of these games, right? So 3-2, 4-3, yeah, these are close games. Then 4-1, 4-1, 4-1, 8-4, 5-1, and then overtime loss to the Kings, which I don't want to talk about. The Kings are struggling. I can use the jinx to help clean this up, but that's a whole different story. But they're consistently beating teams by a large margin. So it's not, like, you can't blame it to, like, ref or like puck luck or anything like that, right? Because they're like winning by 3 goals, 4 goals, where it's like, okay, they're convincingly winning.
Yeah, like it, like they're not, it's not like a lucky streak for them. I mean, granted, some of them is a little bit of luck, obviously, but this is a team that's outplaying the other teams in the streak, right? So, I mean, I kind of still look at this Panthers team, like, I don't think that they're at their full capacity either, right? Like, Montour's still kind of getting back into things. Like, Ekblad's still kind of getting back into things, but everything else has been fine. Like, I'm still a little bit surprised. Like, Anton Lundell, you know, 13 points in 37 games. I think a guy that you thought was going to be, like, your number one center behind Barkov. He's basically a Barkov light, but, you know, something's he just hasn't really performed this season. And I don't know, this team, they're a good team. I don't know. I think it's just that it's the Panthers, right? Like they've never been a team, in my opinion, that's ever performed when we needed them when we expected them to perform. I think last year was a surprise. I think our expectations of them are low, but also the fact that we never think that they'll meet whatever expectations we set for them. So I think that's why they kind of were under the radar, but this is probably like the one streak where I think it's like most likely to end out of all of them. I know you said like they've been beating teams convincingly, but between the Oilers and the other teams, it's probably the least likely for me.
Well, you know, like for this team, for the Panthers, if you look at their schedule, though, they're not facing very strong teams. Yes, the Devils are stronger. Then they're playing the Ducks, the Red Wings, and the Wild. Then you're going to play the Predators, but then they're playing the Coyotes. Like, they've got potential to make this up to 11 or 12. Like, if they beat the Devils, I think they beat the Ducks and the Red Wings for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't look at the schedule, but like of all, I think out of the, well, I mean, except for the Kraken, but like between like the Oilers and the Jets, I would probably say Panthers are third in that list of three. I know you mentioned that we need to jinx one more team. Let's jinx the Kings. They're facing the Red Wings tonight. How many have they lost in a row there? They have the longest current losing streak in the NHL. I know that.
I don't want to talk about this.
But I thought I jinxed them.
I do, but oh my God. This team is so streaky, and I knew that's what I should expect. They have lost 7 in a row, baby.
I think the interesting thing, too, is the fact that I think they're still second in goals allowed behind the Jets. Like, I think they have, like, 97 goals against, yet they somehow have a 7-game losing streak as a part of all of this.
Do you know why?
Because they keep losing 1-goal games?
Yes, that's 6. All right, 1, 2, 3. Yep, 6 out of their 7 have been 1-goal games. 4 of them have been either overtime or shootouts. They are getting points out of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but, like, you need wins, especially in the Pacific with the Oilers and Kraken charging up the standings. Like, you need wins, right?
Yeah, I know you need wins, but, like, if you get losses, I'd rather them be overtime shootout losses than, like, regular.
Yeah, I mean, as a Kings fan, do you regret buying PLD?
Probably. To be a realist, probably. Because you could use the depth right now.
Like, I mean, this team is pretty, like, on paper, they look good, but I guess I probably would say Dubois is the only guy that's not playing at the level that I think we think he should be playing at. I think everyone else has kind of been where they're supposed to be. I mean, you might be able to speak a bit more to this, but I think you do miss Sean Durzi for sure. Like, I think that's
Sean Durzi, but then you also go like, okay, so they play out of their mind, right? So, to get back to the mean, they have to play like absolute stinkers right now. And I think that's what we're seeing, is that regression back to the mean. And that part of it is that part sucks.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, the Kings are still in the playoff spot. It's a little bit more touch and go now compared to the beginning of the season. But maybe you are right, like, they probably overperformed at the beginning of the season, and now this is just a regression to the mean, and then maybe give it a week or two and they'll be playing back to where they're supposed to be at, which I would probably argue like wild card, maybe fighting for the third seed in the Pacific. So kind of just, you know, going back to where they were. So I don't know. It's an interesting team, but if we're talking about further regression to the mean, I would probably say like Cam Talbot and David Rittich's numbers are probably will be a little bit worse than what they're at right now. I mean, David Rittich with a 1.62 GAA seems more than unsustainable.
I'm sorry, are you doubting the Kings goalies?
I just don't think that this is sustainable. I think, you know, they should probably not have a GA under 2.5.
Excuse me, he's an all-star. Cam Talbot is an all-star.
Is he?
Yes, sir.
Like over like
Cam Talbot is an all-star.
I mean, when you look at that West Pacific Division, how did he get the nod over? I guess you had to put Quinn Hughes for the Canucks. There's really not any strong. I think Talbot was a pick because they had to pick Quinn Hughes for the Canucks, so they couldn't put Demko. I'm gonna say it right there. It's Talbot was lucky to be in the All-Star game.
Yeah, I don't know, man. But speaking of Jeffrey being absolutely blindsided, can we talk about how no one heard a rumor about Cutter Gauthier being traded, and then all of a sudden it's just like, oh yeah, by the way, like one of the top prospects is just being traded now.
Yeah, like it came at a weird time too, because it was like a late evening. Like I remember we were all like, I think we were on the chat or something, and someone just posted in the group chat, Draisaitl to the Flyers, and we're like, what the hell? Like, I don't know. I'm like, as we hear more of like the story coming out, I'm surprised there weren't more rumors in the beginning, right? Like, this wasn't just like a quick decision, like. They had like one day and they're like, oh, we're trading Cutter Gauthier, right? Like this was brewing for some time. I'm surprised like there was the news of him like not being at Flyers prospect camp wasn't like a bigger thing either. Maybe it's just the fact like we don't follow the Flyers as much, or I assumed even though like there are college prospects, even though they haven't signed, they still have the rights. Like I assume college prospects still attend prospects camp. Like I don't know. Like, this was definitely a blindside, and I think the fact that Drysdale was involved in the deal made it even more of a surprise.
I love y'all, Flyer fans, but it was totally wild to see you guys go from Cutter Gauthier, basically the next superstar, to being like Cutter Gauthier, barely an AHL player. Just the flip. Just, I don't know if they were hurt or something, like emotionally, but that flip was just like, holy cow. That was so quick.
I mean, when a prospect says that I was basically born to be a Flyer, like, and then says like I'm not signing with the Flyers, I think that's pretty huge. Like that's gonna anger any fan base, right? Like when a player, you know, gets drafted and it's like, oh, I don't want to play for you anymore. Like a lot of teams are gonna get, like a lot of fan bases will be angry. Do you support the idea that Cutter Gauthier basically forced his way out of an organization that drafted him?
I think it's fun to watch as a neutral, right? In this case, I'm a neutral, right? Like, I have no vested interest in whether or not Cutter Gauthier plays for either team. But if it was my team, I'd be, like, kind of pissed off. I mean, so I get where the Flyers fans are coming from.
I guess my question in all of this is, like, we've seen these cases of, well, it's a lot of college players who, you know, try to play out their eligibility, like their eligibility with a team, play the 4 years of college, and then they can sign as like an unrestricted free agent with whichever team they want to play with. But is it not like obvious that when you like register for the NHL draft that you're basically saying like, I'm giving up the right of where I'm going to be playing for the next, possibly the next 7 years. I'm going to be drafted by a team and I'm going to be with their organization unless they get traded or waived or anything. Like, that's the standard, right? Like, you can't be like, you can draft me, but then I will not play for you. Like, especially when it's such a high, like, this is a fifth overall pick, right? This isn't like a Jimmy Vesey or an Adam Fox who are third round picks. I mean, they grew into like decent players, but like, talent-wise, this is a completely different scenario.
Yeah, but then I also kind of get, like, it's kind of a raw deal for these players being like, hey, you know, imagine any other, like, don't look at athletes. Imagine you're just like, hey, I want to be, I don't know, an accountant. And they're just like, oh, okay, by the way, you got to work in this, like, random-ass city you have no connections to for the next 7 years. And you just got to be like, okay, or else I just can't be an accountant. Like, you think that's kind of messed up. Like, if you kind of put it in that perspective, like, any other career besides, like, an athlete. And it's kind of a wild thing, don't you think?
It is, but I think in this case, the fact that Carter Gauthier didn't even sign with the Flyers, I think that's what makes it worse. Like, if a player was like, okay, I signed with this team, I've given it a year or two, tried to make the team, I just haven't been able to break the lineup, I need to change the scenery. I could see that being more reasonable, and I think people would be more empathetic for that. But when a guy's like, no, I don't want to sign for this, for you guys, like, I think that just makes it worse. And, like, I don't know, like, I feel like it's, like, the NHL and the draft have been there long enough where, you know, I don't know, it almost seems like if a player, like, kind of back in the day, like, if a player doesn't sign with a team, then, like, that team should get some compensation for it. Like, it's kind of unfair that, like, oh, they just don't want to sign for you, and now you have to, you're basically forced to trade a guy at probably below his market value.
I mean, I guess, but I don't have this. I don't know. I just kind of put it in perspective. If it wasn't a hockey player or an athlete, kind of just, you know what I mean? It'd be kind of interesting. But speaking of the trade itself, being traded for a Drysdale in a second, I think it's a good value for both teams. I like it. Like, I think I'm higher on Drysdale than a lot of people are, just because I kind of work under the understanding that defense would take a little longer to get set up and everything, to get used to the league. So it just takes a longer, but I think it's okay. I mean, like, I'm okay with that trade.
Yeah, I don't think anyone has a problem in terms of value being traded here, like, between the Ducks and, yeah, like, I don't think there's any problem with that. I think it's just the background story, right, of the Carter Gauthier, you know, ghosting the Flyers and then, you know, not wanting to play there. Like, if you look at this, I mean, I looked at a Flyers lineup and I kind of was like, yeah, there really isn't a spot for Gauthier to slide into right now, right? Like, I get the Flyers are kind of tearing it down, but they've got quite a few forward prospects that they're kind of playing at the NHL level. So, like, where would Carter Gauthier play? And I know your response would probably be like, oh, then just trade some of those guys, the ones that you don't want. But it's kind of like, again, you're going to be selling a negative value. So I think, yeah, it's a good trade. I think the best part of the story I've liked is the fact that I was right in the fact that Zegras is now probably not being considered part of the core in Anaheim, which I've had said since the very beginning that Zegras is not a Duck. But unfortunately, he broke his ankle, so we won't get any other big trades like the Gauthier and Drysdale deal. All right. Was there anything else? Anything else that we're missing? Any, like, giant news story, maybe like a $90-something million news story that we've missed?
Oh, he got paid, didn't he?
Did he get paid enough, or did he get paid just right?
He got paid just right, I think, right? And there's no way you can say he didn't get paid enough.
Sorry, did he get overpaid?
Okay, I got a question for you. So, the Leafs core four, right? So, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and Tavares, right? That's the core four?
Sure.
I would say, if you look at their ability, Tavares is probably the bottom of that list, but at the same time, that's a very strong list to be on, right?
Yep.
Matthews is first, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who is number two and who is number three?
I have been on the bus that maybe you trade Marner. So I'm going to say currently, I think if you're looking for value for, like, of a player to the entire team, I think Marner has more value to the Leafs because he can penalty kill. But I think this season is kind of shown, like, Nylander better offensively than Marner. Like, he's kind of been shown his own I would rank. Can we have a tie between Marner and Nylander? Because I think they bring different things to the team.
No. I want an answer who you have.
Then I would put Marner slightly over Nylander just because of the penalty killing factor and the fact that you can play him in slightly more situations than Nylander.
Fuck. I don't know, man. There's a... but the production from this season makes it a competitive argument, doesn't it?
It does. It changes the entire argument because I would say, like, last year, we would have said, like, oh, you know, yeah, Marner's number two on this team. He's the second best forward. But with Nylander this year just popping off, like, this, it muddles the rankings a little bit. I think you could argue both ways and say, like, whether Nylander or Marner is the second best forward for the Leafs. But I think overall, the main discussion isn't the fact that is Nylander a good player. It's how the hell are the Leafs going to manage their cap structure, right? Like, I'm actually not as worried as most people are. I think next year is going to be the hard year. But, like, if you look at this team, right, in terms of, like, how much cap has been attributed to those players, right? So this season, that core four forwards, I think they're making around $40 million total between the four of them, maybe just slightly over that. The next year after that, that's when it's going to be a bit more. Like, I'm just trying to do rough math here. Maybe like $46 million, give or take. But it's the year after that when Tavares and Marner need to be re-signed. I could see those core four costing back to $40 million a year, right? Like, Tavares taking a little bit less, Marner taking a little bit more, I think you round up back to $40 million. So it's not going to be a big difference between this year and 2 years from now when you have to re-sign Tavares and Marner in terms of how much money you have to spend. It's just next year where everyone's a little bit more worried.
I don't know, man. This is but then Tavares is off the books, right? He's probably going to come back for, what, $5 million?
Yeah, and like the money that it's going to take you to sign Marner, plus the extra like money that you've given to Matthews and Nylander kind of covers the whatever discount Tavares gives you. And at the same time, right, if one of those guys doesn't re-sign, that opens up cap space.
Yeah. Do you think it comes to a situation where, like, how do I put it? I've always felt the Leafs are like just like a more souped up version of the Oilers in the sense that they're very top heavy, but like more top heavy.
I don't know. Like, I think the Leafs are kind of like the Oilers, but they've just always been able to bring in depth guys, right? Like, they've been able to bring Bertuzzi and Klingberg into the season. Yeah, like, I don't know. They're fine. Like, I don't know. I think it's just the Oilers have more troublesome contracts. The Leafs really don't have any bad contracts. Maybe Kemp's deal is a little bit bad. Probably the Samsonov and Klingberg deals didn't turn up as great as you wanted them to. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I think they're fine. It's just next year is maybe the year where they're really, really tight against the cap, where we might see them be like Vegas and put out, like, they only have 19 players on the team, or like, on like dressed. But I don't know. I think the year after, they're going to be fine. Like, long-term, this is okay. You've locked up a core player. You've locked up Matthews. We just have to see what happens with Tavares and Matthews, Tavares and Marner, excuse me, in a couple years.
Okay, so with that in mind, Jeffrey, what are your final thoughts?
I want a prediction from you on when this episode gets released, how many of the streaks that we've talked about. So the Jets, 8-game winning streak, the Oilers, 9-game winning streak, the Panthers, 9-game winning streak, the Kraken's 8-game winning streak, and the Kings' 7-game losing streak. How many of those streaks are going to end because we recorded?
Directly because of our intervention today, I say only one of those streaks remain.
I'm going to say all 5 because it always happens. When you talk about a streak, especially these streaks, they always end. So I don't know when this episode is going to release. We are recording January 13th. I think the first game of the day has just started. So we'll kind of wait and see how many streaks that we've ended. Austin, your final thoughts?
I have none. My brain is empty right now, as per usual. So we'll talk to you in a couple weeks, and until then, bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network. You want to complain about us? You can tweet us at BOP_POD on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.